Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Cross the Line by Julie Johnson. Narrated by Tatiana Sokolov. I wonder how many people I've looked at all my life and never seen. John Steinbeck, The Winter of Our Discontent. Prologue. I wasn't looking for trouble. He found me anyway. Phoebe West, reflecting on her love life. The first time I ever met Nathaniel Knox, I was crying my eyes out. In retrospect, I see this as a fitting prelude to our relationship. Sitting on the grass in the backyard of our estate on Nantucket, I was too focused on the dead bird lying under our maple tree to even notice the new boy next door hopping over our fence from his yard to ours. It wasn't until he'd settled in the grass beside me and asked me why I was crying that I lifted teary eyes to the most stunning face I'd ever seen in my 5 years on planet Earth. He was older, that was certain, at least 8, maybe 9. Tall, like my brother Parker, but there was something sad about his dark eyes. I was too distraught by my gruesome discovery, and, even back then, too captivated by a single glance at him to work up any sense of stranger danger. "The bird," I'd hiccuped, turning back to the tree and pointing with a shaking finger. It's... dead. The boy nodded and leaned closer, eyes flashing with annoyance as he took in my tears.
So? It's just a stupid pigeon.
It's not a pigeon, I managed to squeak out between hiccups. It's a turtle dove.
Sorry, he said, voice a bit softer.
He rubbed the back of his neck, looking nervous and uncomfortable.
I didn't mean to upset you or whatever.
I took a deep breath and stared at him, tears still dripping down my cheeks.
Tell me about the pigeon, he sighed. Sorry, the turtle dove.
That's the boy husband bird, I pointed at the dead dove. The girl wife bird is up there in the tree. My finger lifted straight up to the branches overhead. They lived in a nest together. They sang every morning and every night. I could hear them from my window, right there. I swung my arm around to point at my bedroom window, halfway up the lawn. His gaze followed my finger, then returned to my face. I hiccuped again. They were married, but now the husband bird is dead.
Are you stupid?
His face contorted into a scowl.
Birds don't get married.
My mom says turtle doves mate for life. I wiped my running nose on my sleeve. She says they're just like humans. And now? My eyes watered again.
Now what?
He asked, curious despite his best efforts to act otherwise. Now there won't be any singing.
You are stupid, he said decidedly. There's still one dove left. That one will sing.
I shook my head. The wife bird won't sing anymore because her heart is broken. Mom says she might even die. Something strange moved at the back of his eyes. It looked almost like fear. You can't die from a broken heart, can you? I asked, wiping my nose again.
Well, his scowl reappeared. I don't know for sure. My parents definitely aren't in love anymore, but they haven't died or anything. Yet.
How do you know they aren't in love? I asked. His scowl deepened.
They fight all the time. That's why we moved here. My mom said she wanted a divorce if my dad didn't buy her a bigger house and stop sleeping with something called Cheyenne.
His eyes narrowed in thought.
I don't know what a Cheyenne is, but my mom was real upset about it.
What's a divorce? He sighed.
How old are you?
5. How old are you? His chest puffed out a little.
9.
My brother Parker's 9. He's at soccer right now, though. I tilted my head to get a better look at him. What's your name?
Nathaniel Xavier Knox. You can call me Nate.
I'm Phoebe, I said, ducking my head. You can call me Phoebe.
Have you lived here a long time?
Only like my whole entire life.
I think I'm gonna like it.
He stared at the water.
It's near the beach.
Yeah, I nodded. Sometimes there are jellyfish and seals and stuff. It's cool. We were silent for a while. We should bury him, I said, staring at the dove again. The husband bird deserves a funeral. Maybe it'll cheer the wife bird up.
How do you even know that one's the boy and the other one's the girl?
My bottom lip started trembling again. When he spotted it, he sighed.
All right, don't be a crybaby. Let me go get a shovel.
And so the strange, dark-eyed boy next door went back over the fence and returned 10 minutes later with a gardening shovel. Together we dug a hole. Well, mostly I watched him dig a hole while I stared forlornly at the dove, and then he used a stick to push the bird into the tiny grave. It took barely any time to cover his soft, winged body over with a mound of dirt.
We should say something.
I stared from the mound at the base of the maple tree to the boy with dirt under his fingernails sitting beside me.
They always say stuff at funerals.
It's a bird funeral, he pointed out. You can't say normal human stuff. That's stupid.
My lip trembled again.
You're not gonna cry, are you?
No,
I said in a choked voice. He paused.
I'll say something.
My eyes were wide on his face as he cleared his throat, closed his eyes, and grabbed my hand. I stared at his fingers, large, grimy, and tangled with mine, and felt comforted for the first time since I discovered the bird an hour before. His voice was steady and serious as he started speaking.
I believe I can fly, he intoned somberly. I believe I can touch the sky.
My eyes locked on his face. Whoa, he was like a real priest.
I think about it every night and day, he continued in that even voice. Spread my wings and fly away.
He was like a poet. He cleared his throat again.
I believe I can fly.
I believe I can fly,
I echoed in awe of his originality. Looking back, I can't believe, even at 5, I didn't recognize R. Kelly lyrics when I heard them. His eyes opened and met mine. We both looked up at the same time when, a second later, a bird chirped in the tree overhead. Not a song, just a single, solitary chirp.
Think that was the wife bird?
I asked hopefully. He shrugged.
Maybe the funeral cheered her up, I said, brightening. She chirped. Maybe that means a broken heart can't kill you.
Maybe, he muttered. But just in case, you'll never catch me falling in love.
He looked horrified by the mere idea.
Me neither,
I agreed immediately. He scrambled to his feet, brushed off his hands on his jeans, and stared down at me.
See you around, little bird.
His lips twisted in a smile as he grabbed his shovel, crossed the lawn, and hopped back over the fence, landing firmly in the flesh of my heart as soon as his sneakers hit the grass.
Chapter 1. Some people brag about one-night stands. Whatever. I've got 2-night stands. Either side of my bed. Phoebe West, upon hearing her best friend lost her V-card after prom.
My name is Phoebe West, and I've been kidnapped, I think. Maybe. It's kind of a long story. See, it wasn't supposed to happen this way. For the record, it never would have happened this way if my life were a movie. Preferably a rom-com of some sort with a kick-ass soundtrack and a happy ending. Starring a fabulously styled version of myself opposite Michael Houseman. Or Liam Hemsworth. Or Henry Cavill. I could go on, but I won't. Point is, I had a plan. A pretty good one, or so I thought until yesterday, before it all went to hell faster than you can say, Phoebe, you're a nutcase in Pig Latin. Sigh. This calamity began, as they usually do, because of a boy. No, not a boy. A man. A smoking hot, sexy as sin, older man, who just so happens to be my big brother Parker's best friend, and has been since they were, like, 10, and still thought girls were weird and covered in cooties. Oh, how I wish that phase had lasted.
It would have saved me the torture of watching my undying preteen crush work his way through half the girls at the private prep school he and my brother attended. He would have worked his way through the other half, too, but he and Parker had a strict rule against going after each other's girls, part of their man code or whatever. For that, at least, I could be grateful. Or so I thought. Because a few years later, by which point my binder-doodling, call-and-hang-up, harmless little crush had blossomed into full-on love, or lust, depending on the day, I realized that same man code, which forbade boys from ever stealing each other's girlfriends, also extended to other things. Specifically, to little sisters. More specifically, to me. There I was, bam, smack dab in the fine print of their bro Bible. Rule number one. No dating ex-girlfriends, current girlfriends, or potential future girlfriends. Rule number two. Absolutely no touching, fucking, or corrupting little sisters. Rule number three. Pizza without meat on it doesn't count as a meal. I probably should have been flattered that I ranked above pizza when it came to male priorities, but all I could feel was heartbreak that I, Phoebe West, would never be able to call Nathaniel, Nate, Knox, my own. Never feel the weight of his eyes moving over my face with heart-stopping heat. Never know the touch of his hands, big and rough, gliding across my skin, as I'd envisioned since I was barely old enough to understand my desire for such things. The closest I'd ever get was a brotherly pat on the back and that same cool, narrow-eyed stare he used on everyone. The cocky, condescending, infuriatingly attractive one that made a tiny crease appear in the space between his eyes and clearly said, "Yes, I'm measuring your worth," and, "No, you don't live up." Even his blatant indifference wasn't enough to deter me, because, well, here's the thing. I love him. I always have. Falling for Nate wasn't something I was ever really conscious of doing. It was just something I knew, in the pit of my stomach, in the marrow of my bones, in every dark secret corner at the back of my mind. Ingrained so deep, I wouldn't know how to begin to overcome it. Like my hatred of chocolate and breakfast foods, and my love of old fashions with top-shelf bourbon. It's set in stone. Unchangeable. No matter how hard I wish I could let him go. I can't help it. From that very first day I met him, it was like my body had been programmed to fall head over heels, and my mind had absolutely no say in the matter. So, you can imagine how frustrating it was when, after years of patiently waiting for my boobs to come in, for my wardrobe to sort itself out after that weird retro punk phase I went through, and, most especially, for Nate to come home from his first semester of college and notice that I'd grown up, he didn't even blink an eye at my high school freshman field hockey skirt and newly minted set of knockers. In fact, if anything, he pulled away more, until I'd been demoted from honorary little sister to invisible girl who lives with Parker. That first winter break, he barely spoke to me at all unless it was to say something banal like, "Excuse me," as his body brushed past mine with new carefulness on the way to the fridge. Or, "Is Parker home?" when I'd hear the doorbell chime and race downstairs as fast as my legs could carry me, determined to be the one to greet him. At first, I hated how much those tiny, bland niceties meant to me. How one thoughtless word from him could make or break my entire day. Each, "Hey, Phoebe," and "Tell Parker I called," was a bone thrown to a desperate dog who'd live on any scrap of attention that came her way so long as it came from his hand. It made me feel weak, pathetic, invisible. But afterwards, when Nate dropped out of Harvard, and for all intents and purposes, out of my life, I missed his strained small talk, his tossed scraps. Oh, how I wished he'd come back from wherever he'd gone and look through me while saying, "Pass the pepper," at dinner. Because, as sad as it was to admit, having asshole Nate around was better than no Nate at all. His father, an influential Boston defense attorney with big plans for his only son, was pissed beyond belief when his sole heir joined the special forces and disappeared without so much as a discussion. Parker, his best friend since elementary school, wasn't thrilled to lose his partner in crime, but he vowed to be supportive if it meant making Nate happy. And me? Well, there have been several stages of my post-Knox life, starting with pure, undiluted misery. The slightly melodramatic, "Wherefore hast thou forsaken me, O beloved one?" phase was essentially an 18-month period during which I consumed a lot of chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream and listened to Damien Rice songs on repeat until my eye sockets physically refused to produce any more tears. Then, when I turned 16 and was finally done feeling sorry for myself, the numbing sorrow of missing him wore off, and I realized how freaking pissed I was at him for abandoning me. This may have been because my pride was a bit wounded that Nate hadn't even bothered to come back and notice my months of moping, which was pretty inconsiderate since it was all over him. Even later, when I learned he was halfway around the world training for a tactical team so lethal they didn't even have a name, the firestorm of rage-fueled, unrequited love continued to scorch my insides. My angry phase lasted longer. Approximately 6 years, to be exact, until both high school and college were fading in my rearview, and I was a 22-year-old woman with a pitiful amount of experience with the male sex, all because my stupid, stubborn heart refused to relinquish hope that someday my soulmate would wake up and smell the freaking pheromones. But eventually, as I moved to the city and settled into new patterns in my Back Bay brownstone, as my real life started and, alarmingly, began to slip by without anyone to share it with, I was forced to accept the fact that my reckless, hopeless, and occasionally dirty dreams of Nate would never be fulfilled. With that realization, I transitioned from anger into the indifferent phase, where I've been dwelling unhappily for nearly a year now. The main rules of indifference are: don't think about Nate, don't talk about Nate, and never, ever talk to Nate at the few family gatherings where our paths cross. It's kind of like my own personal fight club, except less violent and way more pathetic, since I'm the only member. Before you judge me for giving up on the man I've loved for almost my entire lifetime, you have to understand something. A girl can only handle so much rejection. And over the years, I've had more than my fair share of it. First, there was a time in fourth grade when I stole Nate's cell phone and spent an entire afternoon, practically an eternity at age 9, locked in my walk-in closet, scrolling through his text inbox and sending eloquent, "Don't text me, I hate you," messages to every girl in his contact list. I know, not my proudest or smartest moment. But in my defense, no one told me he'd be able to see them in his sent folder as soon as he miraculously found his missing phone on the kitchen counter later that night. Oops. And I can't forget the incident in sixth grade, well before my boobs came in, mind you, when Parker threw a huge pool party for his sweet 16 and, jealous of the totally mature 10th grade girls wandering around with what, at the time, seemed like Victoria's Secret model bodies in comparison to my mosquito bites, I went into the bathroom and stuffed the cups of my bikini with enough tissues to keep Kleenex in business for at least the next decade. A mistake, the repercussions of which I didn't even fully realize until one of Parker's bitchy girlfriends pushed me into the pool, the impact dislodging my stuffing like confetti from a cannon. The 2 minutes I spent floating in the water, makeshift boobies drifting around me like white, translucent jellyfish as I listened to the older girl's giggle, were bad enough. The fact that it was Nate who reached in, pulled me out, and wrapped a towel around my shaking shoulders was worse. Mainly because as soon as my feet hit dry land, the tissue began fusing to my limbs, clumping on my skin like some grade school papier-mâché project gone terribly awry. Somehow, when I'd imagined Nate seeing my boobs for the first time, I hadn't reeked of chlorine, and they hadn't been made of paper. Oh well, you win some, you lose some. I seem to lose most, actually. And yet, even the pool party wasn't as abominable as the time in eighth grade when I asked him to be my date to the Sadie Hawkins dance. He didn't even bother letting me down easy. He just grinned, ruffled my hair like I was an adorable but idiotic golden retriever, and walked away, laughing as though the suggestion was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. His rejection stung. Don't get me wrong, but it was the aftermath that really kicked me in the shins. Without Nate as a date, I had no option other than to ask my friend Lila's older brother, Duncan, to go with me. He was cute in a clean-cut, average kind of way. Not dark or dangerous-looking, like other boys who shall not be named, but handsome enough to get my 14-year-old heart pumping. Duncan was a charmer when he picked me up in his father's Porsche, smiling as he slipped a corsage on my wrist, driving with one arm thrown across the back of my seat. Just when I was beginning to think things might not turn out so bad, he downed 6 shots of whiskey in the school parking lot, which left him so incapacitated he couldn't even slow dance with me once during the hour I spent leaning against the wall of the Starry Night-themed reception hall, watching him gyrate questionably against several unsuspecting girls in taffeta. When I called Parker to come get me, he, somewhat grudgingly, showed up, with Nate in tow, because apparently the universe thought I hadn't suffered enough humiliation for one night. Crammed in the back seat next to a moaning Duncan, I listened to Parker and Nate talk about the hot chicks they'd had to bail on to pick me up, and prayed to disappear. When Duncan puked in my purse halfway home, I knew my perfect night at the middle school dance was finally complete. Ah, memories. I could go on, but I'm sure you get the picture. When it comes to Nate, my life has been one long string of humiliation and horrifyingly bad luck. Before he disappeared, taking my heart with him, I tried everything to get his attention. Okay, not everything. I stopped short of stripping to my skin and climbing into his bed naked because, hello, I still have some pride left. Not much, but enough to know that ambushing him in my birthday suit and demanding that he finally remove my pesky virginity, only to be rejected and dismissed with the same detachment he'd used to send an overcooked steak back to the kitchen, is a blow from which my self-esteem would never recover. But I've tried everything else. Heated glances, cold shoulders, sidelong looks, full frontal stares. Ignoring him, adoring him. And you know what? Not a damn bit of it worked. It doesn't matter what I do. Nate still treats me with the same aloof disinterest he always has since the day I hit puberty. In a few days, I'll be 24, which means I've been in love with Nate for more than a decade. And not once in all that time has he shown me so much as a flicker of reciprocal interest. Hell, he doesn't even check out my boobs, which are now very real, thank you very much. If I walk around in a bikini when he comes to visit Parker in Nantucket. And it's not like there's nothing to look at. I'm a generous C-cup, for God's sake. Frankly, I think the universe realized it owed me, after the pool stuffing incident, and bequeathed me with a really stellar set of tatas to even the score. But it was with a heavy heart and some seriously neglected lady parts that, 2 months ago, I decided to toss in the towel for good. I'm not usually a quitter, but it seemed there was no choice other than to lock my heart away in an impenetrable steel box inside my chest and move on. To new men, who actually noticed I was alive and worthy of love. Or at the very least, a little below-the-belt action. After all, a girl can only wait so long. So I did something seemingly harmless. I accepted a date to a stuffy dinner gala with a wealthy, eligible bachelor named Brett from one of Boston's most prominent families. With dark hair and ice-blue eyes, he looked a tad like Ian Somerhalder, which was about his only redeeming quality because most of the time he gave off seriously creepy vibes. Not that it mattered. I wasn't interested in him. I just thought, after years listening to Lila barrage me with advice about the top 10 successful ways to make a man jealous, and 12 irrefutable strategies to forget that rat bastard. I should finally give it a go.
One last-ditch attempt to catch Nate's attention before my ovaries dried up from lack of use.
I figured it couldn't hurt, right?
I just never in my wildest dreams imagined it would actually work.
Chapter 2. Wait, that's what that song is about?
Phoebe West, after listening a little closer to the lyrics of Madonna's Like a Prayer. 2 months earlier. I set my clutch purse down on the counter with a heavy sigh. It's been a weird night, to say the least. That's not much of a surprise, though. Blind dates are probably always weird, even when they aren't at boring business galas full of somnolent speeches and really gross arugula salads, with only a semi-lecherous date to keep you company. Not that I'd know. My dating experience is limited to watching 10-year-old reruns of Friends on Netflix, while Boo, the only man in my life with whom I don't share DNA, snores gently by my side. Don't get too excited. Boo is a pure white mini Pomeranian with so much sass, he could intimidate a Great Dane. He doesn't even lift his head from the gray sectional cushion where he sprawled when I crossed through the low-lit kitchen into the adjacent living room. The space is dark, but I easily make out the outline of his tiny furry chest, rising and falling with each snore. There's a puddle of doggy drool forming on the $300 chenille throw beneath his slackened jowls, growing larger with each rattling exhale. For such a small dog, he makes quite the racket. I brush the bangs out of my hazel eyes and run fingers through my dark brown hair, hoping it might soothe my headache as I plant one high-heeled foot on the edge of the coffee table and begin to undo the straps of my Louboutin. I seriously can't believe I wasted shoes this hot on a night this lame. Not to mention this dress. The long, flowing white Vera Wang, with its paper-thin straps and subtle embroidery, was made for a night with Prince Charming. It's practically a crime that I wasted it on my dud of a date. Brett spent the vast majority of our evening distracted, more preoccupied with family drama than wooing me. Adding insult to injury, he didn't even bother to kiss me goodnight when he dropped me at my front door. Lame. As soon as the skyscraper high heels are off, I sink my feet into the plush carpet and hum in contentment as feeling tingles back into my pinched toes. I know beauty is pain and all that jazz, but you'd think spending upwards of $2,000 on a pair of pumps would ensure, as a minimum requirement, that you don't feel like a victim of Chinese foot binding by the end of the night. Speaking of Chinese, I know for a fact there's a carton of takeout lurking somewhere at the back of my fridge. Immediately, I turn and head for the kitchen, fully intending to gorge myself on days-old lo mein, despite the fact that it's past midnight and my yoga instructor would sincerely disapprove.
Whatever. She wasn't the one forced to choke down that wholly unsatisfying dinner of salad, steamed broccoli, and organic free-range chicken.
I'm halfway across the living room, face pinched in concentration, as I try to estimate the approximate shelf life of Crab Rangoon, when my eyes catch up to my brain and I register the sight before me. All thoughts of midnight snackage fly from my head. My stomach, only seconds ago rumbling with hunger and anticipation, clenches hard and turns to stone as my feet slam to a standstill. For a minute, I just stand there in total silence, staring at the man silhouetted in the archway of my kitchen, his muscular frame backlit by the low light and his face in full shadow. A man I don't recognize. A man I most definitely did not invite into my home. Holy frack, this isn't good. My frantic gaze sweeps the intruder in disbelief as he takes a step closer to me. It's then that I scream. Loudly. A real, honest-to-God, banshee-like wail. I mean, I didn't even know my voice could hit an octave that high. I'd be impressed with myself if I weren't nearly peeing my pants in unabashed girly terror. The scream shatters the midnight quiet, instantly waking Boo from his slumber. Not to be left out,
He promptly begins barking his little head off, leaping from the couch to stand guard at my feet.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?